everybody, and welcome to a very special Amonkhet episode of Brainstorm Brewery. I'm joined, as usual, by Jason Alt and our sub-host, DJ. But this week, we have somebody more important than all of us, and that is your reigning world champion, Brian Brown-Duin. Brian, thanks a ton for coming on the show, man. How's it going?
Thanks for Brown-Duin our podcast.
You're Brown welcome.
All right, I'm done. That's the last one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so what's up, man? How you been?
Pretty good, all things considered. Haven't done too well in any Magic tournaments recently, but life is great, so I really can't complain. As much as, you know, as a Magic player, sometimes I'd want to, but...
Yeah, the variance has got to come back around, and you had a pretty good year last year, so I'm sure everyone listening knows, but for people who don't...
Did you just say he's only world champion because he's lucky, Corbin?
That's an interesting interpretation of that.
No, I mean, he's definitely right. I definitely had a good year last year. So
you're like, oh, you got super lucky last year. So, I mean, it's got to turn around, right?
Look at you regressing to the mean.
For people who don't know, this is my favorite story. And I don't know if I've ever told it on this cast, but I think it was GP Atlanta last year. I was working. You were playing, Brian. And I don't even remember what I was writing about. All I know is I was talking to you, and you were like, yeah, this GP Master thing, I think I'm going to give it a shot. Like, that's how I'm going to qualify for Worlds. I'm going to do it. And that was, like, the second GP of the season or something.
Yeah, it was Atlanta. I was like, basically, nobody really seemed to be interested in it. I think it was, like, maybe the third or fourth GP.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I had, like, done well in a couple of previous GPs. And, like, I didn't see anybody, like, talking about it or, like, really making an effort at it. And I figured if I, like, just started from the beginning, maybe I went to, like, every GP, then maybe I could, like, just have a leg up on people by actually, like, making an effort at it as opposed to just, like, stumbling into it.
Right, which is how everyone else who a couple of the people at the end there, it was a crazy tight race, and a couple of people did just have – they didn't play quite as many events, but they, you know, rather than just top eighting, you know, won a couple of them, and it makes a big difference in the pro point race. But – so it all comes down to the final month, and it was pretty back and forth between you, Seth Manfield, and Saito. And so, I mean, tell me, you know, just briefly, like, of what, for people who listen, don't know, what, you know, got you over the hump there to actually win the GP Master title?
Basically, like, yeah, it was, like you said, it was super close, and I just made an effort to, like, not let it really affect me when I played, like, just play my game and not worry about it. Like, I went to a GP when I think we were tied in points, and I registered the Get Rog Monster in my deck, so you can, yeah, I mean, I wasn't, like, you know.
It was sealed, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, no. Oh, no, it was standard. Yeah. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to play what I want to, like, what I think is good, and I'm not going to, like, you know, be like, I have to play Bant Company at this tournament because it gives me the best chance to go 11-4 or
right,
whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, I didn't do any kind of stuff like that. And then, I mean, I just had a really good season and, like, things were really clicking. So I just, like, kept putting up, you know, 12-3s or whatever and eventually got there.
Yeah, and by got there, you were able to come from behind in the last month, win the title, win the spot at Worlds, and then basically just crush everybody at Worlds.
Yeah, that was pretty fortunate, to be honest. Like, I went 3-3 in limited, which I think is around expectation for myself in a field like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just never lost a match in constructed, which certainly there was luck involved there, but also had two good decks. So kind of a combination of factors there.
Yeah. What was your modern deck that tournament? I know you're obviously on Bant Company and standard, but.
Oh, it was Bant in every format, baby. Okay. And Eldrazi.
Right, right. Yeah, that we also got the extremely memorable finals match there between you and Marcio, where the one game lasted like an hour and a half, ended on Tragic Arrogance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
a hell of a game. I'm glad I got to be a part of that.
Dude, no one was rooting for that Tragic Arrogance more than me because I had to use the bathroom so bad.
You're like, please, my arrogance has gotten to me. I should have gone before the match began.
I was like, I thought I could last through this game, and now it's 90 minutes later, and I'm sitting at this table, and I got to go. No, that was great, though, to just watch the entire finals. The tournament was a lot of fun. So what's your life – you know, how did your life change in the months since winning that?
You know, honestly, I can't say that it's changed in a significant fashion in terms of, like, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like, I basically live the same lifestyle I did before. It's definitely changed a lot in terms of, like, me relating to the Magic community in that, like, you know, people just, I think, approach me a little bit differently now, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, in terms of my own personal life, I can't honestly say that it made, like, a significant impact on my life. I mean, it made a pretty big impact. I just paid taxes.
Yeah.
Made an impact on that. But, other than that, like, yeah, I mean, it just, I guess it gives me a little bit of definitely gives me a lot of security, though, which is nice. Like, I feel like I can, you know, maybe take more risks than I could before, just mm-hmm. because, you know, that.
Well, yeah, and you have, you know, all the benefits that come along with it in terms of Magic, but you also just sort of, you know, get the validation, right, of all the work you had put in.
Oh, definitely. Like, on a personal level. It definitely is huge for me. Like, it definitely, like, yeah, like you said, it's like a validation for the work I put in. And it's also just something I can, like, you know, sit back on and say, like, I did this one cool thing once. You know, like, I have that I can, like, have a fond memory of, that, you know, I did this sweet thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's it was a lot of fun last year to, you know, to watch you make that run and have the story unfold the way it did. And that's one of the cool things that where we're going with sort of the better year-to-year coverage of the pro scene in Magic. So it's been a lot of fun. But so let's move on and let's talk about Amonkhet. That's what people are here to everyone wants to talk about this week as we head into the pre-release. So for those who don't know or maybe just tuning in, what we do here is we start at the top in terms of price and just work our way down the set. And we have BBD here because we're all probably really bad at Magic and evaluating cards. So we want to make sure we have an expert opinion so we don't say anything quite so stupid. But yeah, and then we'll talk about whether or not, you know, if we think there's, you know, financially, whether you should be buying into any of this stuff or if you should just, you know, give it a month and then buy your decks or whatever.
I mean, there's some debate as to whether my opinion is actually an expert opinion, but I'll do my best.
Yeah.
There's some debate other where our opinion is an expert opinion also. So you're in good company with us.
Awesome. Perfect.
All right. So let's start with everyone had their joke about this card and I don't remember whose it was, but I think the best one was where they just called the ultimate flavor text, but Gideon of the Trials. This is the 3-mana Gideon, 3 loyalty, plus 1. Prevent all damage a permanent would deal until your next turn. 0 becomes a 4/4 indestructible. Also 0, you get an emblem that says as long as you control a Gideon Planeswalker, you can't lose and your opponents can't win the game. Most expensive card in the set, $26. And it's got a lot of the hype and, you know, like I said, spurred all the jokes because Gideon Ally of Zendikar was already the best card in Standard and has been for a year.
Yeah, actually, I actually think this card is a little bit overhyped and probably a little bit too high, because I think it is actually pretty comparable to the flip side of Kithian, if you remember that.
Kithian? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Gideon is basically roughly the same as the flip side of Kithian was. Definitely a little easier because you can just, like, cast it. You don't have to, like, go through these hoops to flip it. Mm-hmm. But, like, my recollection of that was that it wasn't that powerful. Like, it wasn't bad by any stretch, but it also wasn't, like, game-breaking. So I think that Gideon is actually not going to be that great. I mean, right now I think for sure it's not going to be with the other Gideon
right.
just being, like, one of the best cards in Standard. Probably just the best card in Standard. But I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with like the whole band thing.
that's a good point.
So
yeah, that's sort of the cloud hanging over everything we talk about here is that you never know. Like, things could change.
This does seem kind of reasonable coming at $26 because we have a $25 Planeswalker in standard right now. In Kaladesh block. You know, Chandra is above $25, so I feel like that never really...
Is she like exactly 20?
I think I sell her at the shop for like 18.
Okay, great.
Close enough.
No, I'm looking her up right now. Where is she? 25. Card Kingdom, CCG House, ABU... Face to face, and Troll and Toad's got her for 22. Yeah, only like four or five stores have her above the 18 DJ sells her for. So
the market price is 18. it's even the other Gideon is 15 or 16 ish, you know, and that's the, like you said, probably the best card in standard, and it's way cheaper than this. So, you know, I have to imagine that. I know you get.
Well, that's because the value in Kaladesh is a little lumpier than it is in other sets.
Yeah, that's true.
So basically, where's the value going to come from in this set if we've only got two cards above $15 for pre-order?
Right. Yeah, it's definitely going to come from somewhere, from those pretty invocations, right?
Counterbalance. That's the value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those premium full art cards are, you know, some of the most expensive cards in the set. So the value looks like it could be spread out. We could just see a $25 Gideon just because the value's got to come from somewhere. But if it's not as playable as Chandra or other Gideon, then it would be hard pressed to maintain
that value. That is true. Do you want to explain briefly, Jason, for anyone who might not know, what you mean when you say the value has to come from somewhere?
Well, the cost of a redemption set and the cost of a box tend to enforce a minimum cost for every card in the set, right? So, like, if every card in the set is worth, like, a buck, then it becomes super easy to go on Moto, buy everything, and just redeem the whole set for, like, $100. And then, you know, once those go up on eBay, people will be competing for them, and the price has got to go up. So, yeah, box price is usually a pretty good way to enforce a minimum price for the set, because you have to spend like what, $100 on a booster box, most people,
right
to get cards,
and if
you know, that's how you get 36 rares. So basically the value of the set overall, one copy of each card, is it's usually a certain price, whatever it is. So that price is going to be enforced by all the different ways to get the cards. So you can't have a set where every card's worth a buck. It just it won't work financially. Right. Yeah, dealers have to.
And so, on the other end of it, you can't have a set where every card's worth $10 because, you know, distributors can always get boxes and sell them to stores at $75 a pop. And if you can reasonably expect to open $100 out of that $75 box, dealers just open it until there's enough quantity out there, because these are all in limited run when they're in standard. Dealers just open it until that reaches, you know, no longer becomes profitable for them to just bust boxes. So it always reaches
equilibrium. The fact that there are so many, I was just going to say that equilibrium, there's so many actors in the market that they have incentive to do either of those two things. And when those, both of those incentives are gone, that's usually when the set price hits an equilibrium and sort of basically the cost gets divided among the cards in the set based on their relative demand.
Right.
And so I don't know. I think I see a lot of low value stuff in the set, and it's low value just because it's spread out more.
Okay.
You know, if there's one or two good cards in the set, they'll both be above 25, and everything else will be a couple bucks. But everything seems pretty good or pretty attractive to casuals in this set. So I think it'll be a little flatter. So
okay.
We're spending a lot of time on Gideon. I get it, but like the $100,000 question for this set is Gideon a good buy at $25? And I think we're all saying
right.
No.
I mean, I'm even curious, BBD. Is it going to see a lot of standard play? I mean, can you run this alongside other Gideon, or do you basically have to make a choice between the two?
I actually talked about this a little bit actually in an article I had come out like I think 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And basically, I don't think that you can play this card alongside the other Gideon, because if you're playing the other Gideon, it's basically the best card in your deck.
Right.
And right. you don't really want to play cards that make the best card in your deck worse. And that's kind of what this Gideon does. Like, where if you put this Gideon out there, like, it's a Planeswalker, you're going to want to protect it, you're going to want to keep it alive, but you can't play your other Gideon with it in play. I mean, you can, but you're losing value that way. So it's kind of... I don't think that it's going to see play alongside the other Gideon, and I don't think it really can see play as long as that Gideon is legal.
Right. So we're talking, you know, at least 6 months before it can do much.
It could see modern play, though. That is certainly a possibility.
You think so? Because of the emblem, or just because it's a three drop, or what?
Basically both. Like, I think the emblem has potential in modern just because of there's a number of decks that basically just like try to win the game, mm-hmm. And this just kind of prevents that. So,
yeah. All right, so let's move on to the other Planeswalker in the set. Coming in at $16 is Nissa, Steward of Elements. So this is actually a pretty cool design, I think. It's and I think it might be the first X cost in a Planeswalker we've seen. I'm not positive on that. Yeah. So it comes into play with – it's X blue-green. Comes to play with X loyalty, plus 2, scry 2. 0, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card or creature card with converted mana costs less than or equal to the number of loyalty counters on Nissa – you put it directly on the battlefield. And then -6, untap 2 target lands you control. They become 5/5 elemental creatures with flying and haste. So this card, I think, is sweet. I mean, this design is awesome, right? You can play it on turn 3 if you really want, and immediately, you know, plus it up to 3 loyalty and get some nice scry value out of it. But also you can play it as an 8-mana... you know, 10 damage fireball, sort of. Plus, there's all kinds of in-between with the middle ability. So, what's your guys' take on this card?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I'm not sure how good it is.
Right.
But I do think it's, like, one of the best Planeswalkers they've designed in a long time. I always compare everything to Garruk Relentless, which I think is their best Planeswalker they've ever made.
Interesting, okay.
I think that this card is pretty sweet, and you know, I'm not actually sure how good it is. It's really hard to evaluate because basically both of the abilities are kind of like do nothing abilities,
right.
And that they don't like immediately affect the game unless you like hit on the 0. But it's you know the plus ability is very good like setting up later turns. But it doesn't immediately affect the game. And then the 0 ability only affects if it hits, which, generally speaking, like immediately when you cast the Nissa, you're probably going to miss. If she only has like one or two loyalty or something. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard for me to evaluate because it has a very high like power level, but it also has like that do nothing potential. So it's kind of like. There's kind of a tug and pull there of like whether it's going to be too slow to do something, or if the format slows down, like then the abilities start to really churn together.
Right. It strikes me as the type of card where, you know, unlike some of the better, more popular Planeswalkers you see in Standard, you would never really play 4 of them because it's not something you really want to hit on curve. It's just sort of this value card that if you have the right deck, you can maneuver into being good, you know, sort of, similar to, you say, you know, Obnixilis or something, where you don't want to just load your deck up with them, but sometimes having one of them is really good. And Nissa, if we have some sort of, you know, blue-greenish deck that it could slot into, could be pretty good in that role.
That's the real question, is like the Simic deck it goes into, because when was the last time we had a Simic?
I was thinking about that. Turbo Land, right?
Back when you were playing Tide Warp and Avengers
and Frost Titan or whatever that deck was, that was the first deck that came to mind. I mean, BBD, what do you think? Is there even going to be a shell for this?
Based on what we're looking at right now, I'm going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that this card could be a I talked a little bit about it, and I was saying it was a sideboard card for 4-color Saheeli decks,
right?
Where, like, if you get into a grindier matchup, it's going to be pretty good. You have a lot of value cards to hit off of it, too. But I think that like it as it stands, there really isn't like an existing shell that wants this card. So I'm not sure about that. One thing that I think is a little bit interesting, that kind of the same thing I said about Gideon too, is I actually think this card could be disgustingly good in modern elves.
I think definitely could be, actually.
So I got, that's something that I haven't seen anyone really talk about, but like the zero ability is basically draw a card with like, you know, a huge percentage of the deck. So.
Yeah.
It seems kind of like an EDH Planeswalker, and that's not going to affect its price at all either way. Either it's good in EDH and the price doesn't move, or it's bad in EDH and the price doesn't move. So I really don't care. For perspective, this is what, at like 15, and so is Heart of Kieran. So this has to be Heart of Kieran good
to go anywhere.
I don't think it is.
Plus, it's just like screams like, you know, next dual deck or whatever sort of thing. Or did they just did Nessa though, didn't they? So maybe not.
Yeah, they did.
I thought they did Nessa.
All right, so I think.
I'm glad we just didn't get another stupid Kiora.
Kiora was sweet, man.
If this card's name was Kiora, I bet people wouldn't have even read it. Like, yeah,
it does kind
at least
of
they
have
made it Nessa, so people would read the text.
It does kind of have some Kiora like abilities.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out there's only so many. Sort of blue-green-ish things that feel actually blue and green, you know? That's why they look sort of similar. But, yeah, it is cool. I'm excited to play it wherever I get to play it, you know? It's fun.
They're way too married to the Gatewatch.
Well, they're allegedly not going to be as much moving forward. They talked – Mark Rosewater said that.
I think we're fatigued. Everyone's fatigued. With Gatewatch Planeswalkers.
I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know how long it's going to take for the Gatewatch to filter out a bit.
Maybe they said like starting with Hour of Devastation.
Yeah, okay. But that means we're still stuck with. I mean, it's another 6 months of having multiple Lilianas and multiple Nissas in Standard.
Sure.
Although we can give them. I mean, maybe you can cut them a little slack on that front, because when they were designing all of this, they would have been on the 18-month rotation plan. And. You know, Gideon Allies Zendikar would have rotated out when this Gideon rotated in, you know, and it would have looked a lot, you know, it'd be a very different conversation. But anyways, all right, well, let's talk about some more Gatewatch then. Liliana, Death's Majesty, another $15 Planeswalker. This is an interesting one. It's 5 mana, 5 loyalty, plus 1, create a zombie, and mill 2. Minus 3, return a creature card from your graveyard to battlefield. It becomes a zombie. And minus 7, destroy all non-zombie creatures. These are relatively straightforward abilities, really, for Planeswalker that they've done like 12 times or whatever now. Is there anything, Brian, here? Or is this just, you know, it's got a lot of similarities to other Liliana. It's got some similarities to other 5-mana Planeswalkers like Obnixilis. What do you think about this one?
I actually think this is the best Planeswalker in the set.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, so I don't know how it affects like things price wise, because kind of like Obnixilis, like I don't think you're going to be playing like 4 copies of this in your deck.
Right.
So it's going to be like, you know, 1 or 2 copies kind of thing, where it's, you know, it's 5-mana Planeswalker. It's not like Elspeth Sun's Champion where it takes over the game or anything. So, but I do think this card's actually really good, because just I think it's actually better than Obnixilis in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll end up seeing a good bit of play. Just being able to put a creature directly into play is pretty strong with a lot of decks. Like, I think the green-black, like, Constrictor decks, being able to, like, put a Verdurst Gearhulk back into play, or, you know, even, like, a Rishkar or something is pretty good. So I think that this card is going to definitely see play in those decks and could see some play elsewhere as well. So I think it's going to be pretty good, but I don't know, like, you know, it's going to be like maybe 1 or 2 copies, maybe sometimes just only in the sideboard for a number of decks. But I do think the card is better than either of the other 2 Planeswalkers.
Do you think the fact that it's a guaranteed 5-mana Zombify, I guess is the card it's calling back to, but whatever, a reanimation spell. Do you think there's any potential for, especially considering the you know, the zombies and the embalm and everything going on in Amon Kett, do you think that there's a deck where instead of just being a, you know, rebuy my Verdurous Gear Hulk because that's really strong, if anything where it's sort of more dedicated along the graveyard theme, is that something that, you know, we're looking at it all for standard, or do you not think that that is possible?
I think that there's a chance that we could see something like that. Actually, I think it's minus three abilities, just exactly Rise from the Grave.
Rise from the Grave, yeah.
I guess you can only target yourself or your own creatures, but I think it's certainly possible. Like we still have like Tormenting Voice and Cathartic Reunion and cards like that. So I could see something like that being possible, but I don't think that that style of deck's really been great since Unburial Rites. So yeah. I have to be convinced that that's going to be like a powerful deck, but it definitely has, and it also comes down to what you're putting back into play too. Like right now, like, I mean, there's Ulamog, but I don't know if that's good enough because it doesn't get the trigger when you.
Right. You just get a big creature that gets Stasis Narrator cast out.
Right.
It's just, it doesn't seem like a card for a Reanimator Shell. It seems more
just
like
a value card.
Okay, you're gonna waste all your removal on my stuff, and then I pay an Unburial Rites amount of mana.
I think this one might have stronger casual appeal than other Liliana's before it, because it is the first Liliana that does the thing that she does in the story all the time, which is bring back dead stuff directly into play.
Well, the Liliana Vest brought back everything.
Yeah, but that was an old, I don't know.
Like, and for what it's worth, Liliana Vest is expensive despite multiple printings.
Yeah, that's one with a strong casual appeal. Yeah. So, like, I think this one could hold, like, $10 after it rotates just because of that fact. Or if it does go to 5,
I think
it's
something. Ten would be tough, but I could.
But if it does go down to 5, I think it's something you want to, like, keep an eye on for the long term because of its casual.
Well, I mean, we're the three Planeswalkers are the three most expensive cards right now, and if, you know, we're operating under the working assumption that Liliana is the best of them, we at the very least might see that flip around where Liliana is more expensive than Gideon in a month.
Or the other two just go down in price and the value gets soaked up elsewhere and Liliana stays around 15, which seems like the most likely outcome to me. If you look at, like, Kaladesh and Aether Revolt.
But say
there's nothing above 15 in Aether Revolt, and there's only one card above 15 in Kaladesh.
Right, but
and that's Chandra though. So you think this could even go up?
Well, I don't
up?
Think it can go up necessarily, but I do think say if you open up Gideon at the pre-release and someone else opens up Liliana, that's a trade you're looking to make. Maybe not trade across, but you know, obviously Gideon's worth more, right? So maybe you look to play that swap rather than holding, you know, Gideon. If we think that Gideon is going to do nothing, which I tend to agree with Brian on that one, that it's just going to be very difficult to do anything.
Yeah, I think that ultimate ability has a lot of people.
Exactly. People think it's really cool, which it is, but it's not going to. So, I think I'm looking, if I'm open a Planeswalker and other people want my Planeswalker, I'm probably looking to pick up Liliana if I'm looking to pick up a Planeswalker, you know?
That's fair.
All right.
We spent a lot of time on the Planeswalkers, but that seemed like a good idea.
Yeah.
The only other non-land card above $10, it looks like, is this next one, As Foretold.
Lily likes that one.
Really? You want to talk about As Foretold? Yeah, she's a Simic EDH player already. Yeah.
And As Foretold, the cries came out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. She's like, this card's overrated. It's a trap.
Yeah, we had to warn Brian before the cast. So you didn't know. It's sometimes when we record during the day, man, these babies just take over. Foretold though, this card's nuts, right?
It's a non-mythic, and it's the
It's a mythic.
Fourth most expensive.
Yeah,
is it
yeah,
mythic? It doesn't look mythic. That makes more sense then. Yeah,
it's 3-mana enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on it. Once each turn, you may pay 0 instead of the mana cost for a spell with converted mana cost equal to X or less. So obviously, everyone's talking about you can play this and immediately play a 0-cost spell, whether that's, you know, Living End or Ancestral Vision being
restore
the big
balance.
One. Restore balance to just destroy all their stuff. Like, I don't know if they're going to have to.
Lotus Blue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Are they going to change the rules on.
They already said they weren't
going really?
To. Like, everyone was worried about that. Yeah, because when this card first came out, everyone was like, yeah, we literally just got burned on the.
Expertises, yeah.
Yeah, so. Everyone asked, and I think it was Morrow's Tumblr, maybe. He said, no, we're not going to change the rules about.
Well, this card is sweet.
Which frees him up to
well,
do it
like,
later.
How would they. How would they even go about changing the rules? Because the other one, like, even the rules were, like, really super complicated about how split cards work.
Whereas,
these are just pretty straightforward. It's, like, it's a zero
this
cost
This is just,
spell.
Hey, that has a cost of zero. Yeah. Yeah. Is this why you picked Nyx, Doug? Did you know this was going to happen?
No.
Your pick of the week was Nyx, like, 2 months ago. That's really suspicious.
Yeah,
it was less than that.
Inside knowledge. DJ,
that's a,
you knew
living out
of
the middle
was
of nowhere.
A pick of the week that I'd been holding on to for like 3 months, and then I waited until I didn't have a pick of the week ready, so I just tossed it out.
Brian,
I love when you're accidentally right.
So Brian, how busted is As Foretold? Is it as good as we think it is?
Are we talking standard? Or are we talking modern?
Well, both. I mean,
yes.
You know, yeah.
So in standard, I don't think this card is like particularly playable because. Just the ability to get free spells in like standard doesn't have the kind of velocity, generally speaking,
mm-hmm.
to like use a card like this. Like I could see maybe because like you need to like be able to get counters on it to cast your like more expensive spells for free. But by that point in time, like you're gonna have like you know seven lands in play. You could just cast them anyway. And you're going to be casting spells, like, throughout the game. You're probably going to be down to, like, you know, two or three cards in your hand at that point where, like, being free on mana is not going to really, you know, do much for you. But then if we're looking at, like, you know, a format like Modern or something where there's a lot of ways to keep your hand stocked and there's a lot of things you can do with, like, casting spells for free, I think it could be pretty good there. I don't actually know how good. I'm not... generally the best when it comes to like combo oriented cards at like knowing how great they're going to be.
Right.
It kind of feels a lot like Jeskai Ascendancy felt where, the hype was extremely high and eventually it wasn't quite as, it was still a good card, but it wasn't quite as high as everyone thought it was going to be. I'm not sure exactly where this falls like that, but it kind of reminds me of the same kind of thing. It's like a 3-mana enchantment that does some like broken things, but who knows whether it's like good enough or not.
Yeah, and Ascendancy actually just has completely fallen out of the metagame. Like, I don't think I've seen that deck in months.
That card's gonna be broken again one day. That's
it's interesting because I looked at As Foretold and I looked at it as you know, obviously in some combo decks it could be really good, but I was also just thinking of it in like the Sphinx's Revelation type deck, right, which may or may not be possible again. We have that new card that's similar-ish to Revelation, but it's if you can, you know, counter their thing on turn two with the Force Spike or whatever. On turn three, you put down As Foretold. On turn four, you you know, do whatever. Or turn five, you're at the board, right? And at that point, you're right. You are low on cards. My thought was at that point, though, you get free. You're allowed to tap out, right? You can play your 5-mana Planeswalker or whatever you're doing and then still have a counter spell up on their turn. And it allows you to tap out while still holding up counter magic. But it's a good point about not having ways to refill your hand. So maybe you're not actually gaining much in terms of mana there. Because you are sacrificing a card.
You have ways to refill your hand in Modern with this.
It's also the, like, the idea of kind of like a best case versus worst case scenario card.
Right.
Like, generally speaking, cards don't really see play in Standard if they have a high, like, level of variance as to how good they are. So, like for example, like, the situation that you were talking about there, where mm-hmm. you play it on turn three and then you do a couple other things... like I actually think it would be very good in that draw. Like you're definitely right, but then there's going to be the time where you know, peel it off the top on turn 7 and it just takes way too long to get going and you're already like low on cards, so you're not even going to like get the value out of it by the time it does get going, and it's basically going to do nothing. And like cards like that generally like very rarely see standard play. Mm-hmm. Like I think one of the few exceptions for me is Dynavolt Tower, which I was a little bit surprised that it honestly saw play. But yeah, generally the cards like that don't really see that much play in standard. But I think in modern it's fine because like you can draw it on turn 5 or something, play it, and then still cast, you know, Ancestral Vision.
Right. Well, yeah, and it helps take a card in Ancestral Vision that was already bad when you drew it late and sort of negate it, you know, negate the downside there. Okay, well, so then, Ash, this is obviously insane in Commander, but I think also you brought up Dynavolt Tower, and one of the key...
I don't know how insane this is in Commander.
Dude, I'm excited for it. Commander games go a billion turns, and you can proliferate, and... It's going to my Azami.
I don't think
deck.
It goes in every blue deck, but I think it has to go in a deck where you plan on proliferating it.
I'm happy to put it in my Azami deck. I know that.
Just yeah, it's basically a level up Omniscience.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of true. Yeah, in standard, the other thing with the card in talking about Dynavolt Tower, and I think. Since you brought it up, it kind of makes sense. You know, Dynavolt Tower is sometimes not great on turn 3 or whatever, but sometimes it's okay. But it is usually pretty good on turn 10, because at that point you probably have energy, you're able to do something with it. Whereas As Foretold doesn't scale that, you know, you only want it early. And so you're right, the worst case is a lot worse case than something like Dynavolt Tower. Okay, so I mean, at $14... You know, we keep talking about the value having to go somewhere, but it may not be As Foretold.
No, I kind of foresee this going down in price a little bit. I think there's a lot of hype, and I think As Foretold did its job, which was make DJ's stupid specs of...
Restore balance.
Restore balance, and...
Yeah, I don't think Nyx has hit yet.
Yeah, that's second level. First level thing is like, oh, this card affects this card directly. Oh my god, kid. She wants to talk about Nyx. Look, that's second level thinking, guys. The first level thing is this card's affected directly, but second level is like, I gotta play this against that card. And
so what did you do with your stupid restore balances, DJ?
I've sold a couple play sets of them. I still have probably at least 120 copies.
Alright, you dirty speculator.
Probably want to be getting
scummy
out of those,
speculator.
Huh?
All right, let's hit the next card in the set here, which is five cards. It's five lands, the full art premium lands, the Bolas Horn lands, which are, by the way, really awesome.
Yeah, they're going to be what they're going to be worth. Those are pretty hard to get, so.
I don't even know how you're supposed to get them. You could get them at the open house. Is that true?
Yeah, they're also in booster packs, though.
Oh, yeah, they're, like, rare,
like they're in,
but in
like
booster packs.
One non-foil one is, like, a 1 in 4 chance of getting it in a booster pack, so I have to assume that the foil is kind of the same, like, ratio.
Oh. Well, these are really cool, actually. I like them. Usually I'm whatever on lands, but I think these will actually hold value. These will probably be the most expensive, in my opinion, these will be the most expensive full art lands we've had since Unhinged and Unglued.
You mean, like, are you just ignoring Therese Nielsen's Judge Foils, or?
Yes, I was, yeah. Because those are not a thing you can get in a pack. But yeah, I mean, obviously they're, and I actually don't know how the math works out, you know, like a BFC, for instance, you got a full art in every pack, but there were five of them or whatever, four of them of each color. Whereas these, there's not, but they're more rare. But I think just having Bolas Horns on them and the fact that they're a cycle, will go a long way towards propping up the
value. They did say that you can get some of these in the, like, when you buy the deck builder toolkit or whatever, like, some of your lands will be full art.
Oh, sure.
I forget the ratio, but they said that, like, not all, but some of the lands you get will be full art.
Interesting. Well, I think these are sweet.
I don't think that's enough to make me want to buy a deck builder toolkit.
There's Bolas fanboys out there, so...
Yeah, that's why it's weird that the Plains is the most expensive one right now. I would think the Black, Blue, and Red ones would end up being the most expensive. Yeah. But the Plains is a full dollar more than the other ones.
Interesting.
I don't think that's, like, statistically significant. It's probably just because of, like, some low supply or some, like, one person who bought a bunch of Plains or...
Yeah, that is true, because
there's
so few of them.
There's probably not enough of these out there to make that judgment yet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying I expect that to change. I expect the bolus colors to be more expensive later. So, it let's stop pretending what I didn't what said wasn't valuable, man.
All right, let's move on then to our first god, Ronus the Indomitable. 3 mana, 5/5, death touch, indestructible. It can't attack or block unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. And then for 3 mana, another creature you control gets +2/+0 and trample. This seems like a fairly, of the gods we've seen here, pretty easy to turn this one on in the sense of actually making it able to attack and block, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that it's pretty good with Heart of Kieran is yeah. is a good combo. Like, yeah. that's immediately a 4-power creature. And I think that you can also, like, I'm considering, like, trying to, you know, make fetch happen and bring back green white because Gideon also turns it into a creature as well. So you could play like Heart of Kieran, Gideon, and this, and maybe try to make something happen there. Plus, like, giving trample to Gideon is pretty good too. So I mean, on those merits, I think it's pretty good. Like, it kind of reminds me of Nylea, where Nylea was really, really good in some matchups. Where things weren't, like, you know, if you were playing like a green mirror where you're not really killing each other's creatures, then like Nylea was really, really strong. But then if you're playing like against a deck with like a lot of removal, like you have Nylea the Hunt in play and like no other creatures, yeah. and you're just kind of sitting
yeah.
there. So I can see like both sides of it, but I do think it's good. I think it'll see some play, and I'm not sure. I like that it also goes well with like Verdurous Gearhulk's 4-power.
Right.
If you have like Tireless Tracker and Crack a Clue, that's 4-power.
Rishkar helps like pump those things up to 4-power as well, and just whatever you have in play. Yeah, it seems like a thing.
I think the card is good. Like, I think that it's not like, like, it's a legendary creature, and it takes a little bit to make it work, so I don't think it's, like, a card that's going to be, like, you know, extremely expensive cost-wise, but I do think it'll see some play.
Yeah, it's $10 right now. I mean, it seems like that price might hold for a little bit. I mean, because it is a mythic, and it's a god, it's got a lot going for it. I mean, I think $5 is probably reasonable in the, you know, the medium term for it. So I don't know. It could be fun. I mean, probably not a, like all of the gods we're going to talk about, it, you know, probably won't be a 4 of, but I think in terms of evaluating, if we're setting the bar that they need to be able to attack and block to be worth it, then this one is definitely near the top of the list.
I don't know how it's hard to know if it's going to be EDH popular yet. On EDH Rec right now, 9 people have submitted a Ronus deck, so
yeah.
It's a little too early to call that, definitely. Compare that to Nylea, which has 5,500 decks. So in a couple years, people might come around on this like they did on Nylea.
All right.
500 decks for Nylea?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but over however many years, you know, right?
Well, I'm not saying that if this were good, it would have 5,500. I'm just saying it people could come
right.
around on it.
All right, let's talk about... I don't know if this is the most hyped card in the set, but it's definitely a hyped card. Harsh Mentor. It's a 2/2 bear for red. Whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact creature or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, they take 2 damage from Harsh Mentor. People are going insane over this card. Is there any way it lives up to the hype?
No, I talked some friends out of buying this.
Yeah.
I think it's quite good, actually. I think it's on Eidolon of the Great Revel level.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's as good. I don't know if it's as good. In some cases, it's certainly better, but in a lot of cases, it's worse. But I do think the card is quite good, and I don't know. I honestly have no idea price wise, like where it goes, because, I mean, I know Eidolon's. Or at least at one point was pretty expensive.
Yeah, I think it's still like 10 maybe.
That was from like whatever set that was from, like one of the small sets that didn't see a lot of printing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that's going to like affect the thing, but I do think this card's going to see a lot of play in like older formats. Probably not that much in standard. Probably zero play in standard for the most part, but maybe a little bit. But.
I think this gets cheap before it gets expensive, yeah, I agree. So I don't like its pre-sale price, oh, yeah. But I like
it. I think it's kind of awkward that they didn't design it to stop the Saheeli combo.
I like it playability-wise.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, it's really, I mean, I don't know if it, they designed this and it was just too late or whatever, but it is odd. It just does everything except stop the one combo. It needs to stop.
Well, they didn't see the Saheeli combo, so they...
They put a significant amount of artifact hate in this. Like, they put a bunch of other stuff in the set to stop the combo.
Yeah, there are a couple things to do that. I mean, that's for sure. That
do we want to... Actually, do we want to talk about how... I forget who posted on Twitter, but somebody mentioned that... It was in, like, the Amon Cat thing on Twitch recently, but somebody said that they put... They finished Amon Cat after the Kaladesh Pro Tour.
Okay.
So, like, they had data from the Kaladesh Pro Tour when they were finishing up Amon Cat, which is a lot sooner time cycle than we're used to seeing, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, they saw,
there's a bunch of Ardu vehicles in the top 8. We need to add a couple of artifact hate cards to Amon Cat.
I had not seen that, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't remember who posted on Twitter, but I think it was during, like, the loading ready run pre-release or something like that. I don't know. It was on some sort of Amon Cat video on Twitch recently.
That's good because, I mean, look at standard of the past 3 months. People basically, I mean, maybe not 3 months, but at least the last month or two, people just gave up on it, basically. So anything that lessens their, you know, allows them to lower their response time to problems is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, they've demonstrated they're willing to be a little bit more nimble, so... If they make mistakes, they're less catastrophic. I like that commitment.
I mean, I think Harsh Mentor will probably go down to 5. Baby, come on, man. Sorry, my kid's just throwing things. I think Harsh Mentor probably doesn't go below 5. If it you know actually does see reasonable play in eternal formats, but I don't think it's going up from 8. I mean, I think it's already come down from like 10 or something. So. All right, so next up we have Liliana, the Death Wielder, which is our intro deck Planeswalker. It's an expensive, very expensive Liliana. Does stuff. Anyone have anything interesting on this card they want to talk about, or is it just another intro deck Planeswalker?
Nope. Another intro deck Planeswalker.
Yeah. Okay. All right, after that, now this is an interesting one. This is one I've actually seen more people talk about the art, I think, than anything else. But Vizier of the Menagerie, 3/4, 4 mana green card. You may look at the top card of your library, and if it's a creature card, you can play it, and you can spend mana of any color to cast creature spells. It's $7.50 right now. Is this card going to do anything in standard, Brian?
I don't think so, but I also wouldn't say definitively no.
Mm-hmm.
I think for this card to see standard play, it's going to have to be a deck that's basically like Rally the Ancestors was, where it's kind of like a creature combo deck, or maybe even like maybe like a Cryptolith Rites deck. This could be something there.
Okay. Yeah.
Where you need to be able to like, yeah, you need to have a bunch of cheap creatures and like ways to use them effectively. Where you can like kind of go off a little bit with this card, but yeah, I mean, I could see like some sort of Duskwatch Recruiter deck playing this card.
So I wouldn't
count it out. Like, I do think this card's pretty good, mm-hmm. but I think like right now, like, you know, in a deck like the 4-color copycat deck, I'd rather just play Chandra.
Right.
Then play this card. So
it's certainly obviously it draws the comparison to Oracle and Moldai, and I think this is just. Definitively worse than Oracle and Moldaya.
It doesn't even do the same things. It has the same sort of like ability, but it doesn't do
right.
The stuff that Oracle does the same way. It's not ramping.
It's not ramping you. It's not taking bad cards off the top of your deck either. The turn you play it, you can't get any value of it like you can with Oracle, or you know, you probably if you play it on curve.
I think the major difference, too, is that, like, Oracle and Courser gave you, like, the ability to do the... You could use their abilities basically with zero mana investment, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, this is closer to Moldai Channelers, and if you don't know what that card is, there's a reason for that.
That card was sweet when it first came out. I loved it, and then it didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is that bad, but I'm saying this is not Oracle of Moldai. Yeah. I'm certainly there are decks that will play it in EDH, but I don't know if that's going to make you glad you bought it.
No,
at
probably
bucks.
Not. I feel like
this is a $2 or $3 card in a month.
Yeah, there's that. Also the trend has been like very down, and even more so than the rest of the set, you know.
I also think just a 3/4 creature in a world of Heart of Kieran, Gideon, Felidar Guardian.
Yeah. That's also a very good point.
Grasp of Darkness.
All right. So next up we have other Gideon. I'll mention it because it's 5 mana, but is there anything that this, any possibility of this in Standard, anybody?
I mean, Saffron Olive's going to build a 12 Gideon deck with that one tutor that searches for Gideons, and
yeah,
that's probably going to happen.
All right, that's a thing, I guess.
Sure.
All right, moving on from all the Gideons here. I think this is Samut, Voice of Descent. This is the keyword soup card. It's 5 mana, red, green, 3/4, flash, double strike, vigilance, haste, other creatures you control have haste, white mana, tap it, untap another target creature. That's a whole bunch of words. Do they add up to anything?
Corbin, I have a question.
Yes.
Why say haste and then other creatures you control have haste as opposed to Urbrask's text of all creatures you control have haste?
You're probably asking me because you'd think I'd have a good answer, and I don't.
Are you not a judge?
I am, in fact, a judge, and I don't have a good answer.
I don't think it's a judge-related thing. I think it's just a templating thing because they've been doing that with other stuff too, where like you'll get a lord that says like, you know, this creature gets first strike and then give all other whatever first strike.
Okay.
Or like I think like the cat, you know.
Yeah, the lifelink cat that makes.
Cats, yeah. Has a similar type wording too on that. So I'm not sure like why they made that change, but they've kind of been doing that with all the cards.
Yeah, I don't know. Plus, I mean, now we get all the keywords on one line, and it's, well, that's not even true because Flash is on its own line.
Flash is greater than all, apparently.
It's weirdly worded, man. I don't like it.
All right. Okay. BBD, do you think there's anything here for Standard?
No, I don't.
Okay, that's how I felt too.
Yeah, I think it's like a worse version of Surak, the original one, the 6-mana one.
Yep.
And that card looked good and saw
that card was awesome. And yeah, you're right. Did nothing.
None of the teamer stuff really got there for long. That was really disappointing.
Savage Knuckleblade, may it rest in peace.
I'm trying to remember what that Surak even did. It was good, right?
It was Flash. Uncounterable.
Guy, it only costs 5 mana. Trample. That's what I thought. Yeah,
yeah,
it only costs
5 mana. 6/6 flash, uncounterable.
Creatures, spells you control can't be countered. Other creatures have trample.
Yep.
That card was so
good. I know
good.
It did trample itself.
And now it's a 75-cent mythic.
Nobody cared, though. Nobody wanted to play.
It didn't have trample itself. That was...
I mean...
Big ones.
It didn't have that on a separate line on the back of the card or something?
It's weird. All right. How about Glorious End? This one's pre-selling at 6. This is your red mythic in the turn. At the beginning of your next end step, you lose the game.
This card is sweet.
Is it?
What? When do you want this card?
Never. Well, I'm going to say when you're going to lose the game. But...
This card is sweet.
Yeah, but you have to be on the brink of winning also.
Yeah, I don't like it. Brian, do you see any uses for this?
Not really in Standard, but I could see it like having non-standard applications. But I'm really skeptical of these kinds of cards always, mm-hmm. because usually the decks that like have to support these kinds of cards are really like inconsistent decks yeah. that don't really ever pan out. So yeah. To me, like I'd be surprised if this thing ended up seeing a bunch of play.
My favorite use of it so far is you just put it in the sideboard of your burn deck, and then cast it when your opponent's comboing you out. But if they're playing
and
ad
then
nauseum,
you have to untap and burn them out.
Do what? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But the thing is, if it's ad nauseum, like they just have Pact of Negations at that point, anyways. Or maybe you got maybe you do it in response to their ad nauseum. I don't know. It seems bad.
Yeah, like you can wait until they like play the ad nauseum and then play it. But then if they have like Phyrexian Unlife in play, are you killing them next turn? Yeah, like,
no. You have to hope they had Angel's Grace and then hope that you can kill them, which seems unlikely because you boarded Glorious End into your deck.
No, you just Snapcaster this back.
Good plan.
Buy yourself another good turn. Yep.
Then you can beat down for two.
Counter the trigger with Disallow.
You can counter the trigger with this.
Really? Oh yeah, because it'll be a triggered ability, yep. I guess, that goes on.
Yeah, you can disallow it. You can delay trigger. You can have Gideon's Emblem in play to make it so you can't lose the game.
Now we're playing lots of bad cards. Anyways,
Hive Mind isn't a bad card.
No, Hive Mind's a sweet one. That's actually probably the best thing I've heard. Hive Mind and then Glorious End. All you need is 8 mana.
Or Sundial. Make it somebody else's problem. Gosh. That's what we do in EDH. We have cards with drawbacks, and then we make other people play them. It's called quit hitting yourself.
All right.
It's not good, though.
Here's one that's actually, after initially, coming down as expected, it's sort of bottomed out and even shown a little upward movement. Angel of Sanctions. 5 mana comes into play, Flying Angel. You exile a non-land permanent until it leaves. It also has Embalm cost for 6, and obviously does the same thing. Now, this card might be good. I know the preview article for it that Craig wrote had this, laid out a pretty good case for this being pretty solid and standard. And it matches up well against a lot of stuff, plus it's built-in advantage because of the Embalm. What do you guys think? Is this good? This seems like we could have our first candidate for, card actually likely to pick up some of the value.
So I have like two minds about this card. One is that I think this card is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's really good as it is. Like, I do think it's a really powerful card that would normally see like a ton of play. Like, I think that this card would be like, this card in most formats, I think, would see a ton of play.
Right.
The only thing that scares me is the fact that Archangel Avacyn still exists.
Yeah.
And it really sits, like, on top of this card. So this is one of those cards where, like, I always have a few cards in my head and I'm like, once this rotates out,
mm-hmm.
like, this is going to be good. And I think that Angel of Sanctions is one of those cards where I think it'll see, like, some play immediately. But I think once Avacyn's gone, like, it's going to be really good.
So that's actually good financial opportunity, because if this card comes out of the gate at $6, does nothing, everyone's going to go, well, shit, and dump them. And then if you can pick these up for 2 months and wait for $2 and wait for rotation, that's a pretty good opportunity, actually.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it plays this weird little game of chicken with Archangel Avacyn, too. Even if you go beyond the part where you can only have so many 5-drop angels in your deck, but it can take away Avacyn, but Avacyn can also just block it in combat and kill it. But yeah, the biggest issue, right, that you're saying, Brian, is that it's just they both sit at the same mana cost.
Yeah, I actually think that there's a real, actually, three-way game of chicken that I think is pretty sweet between this card, Avacyn, and Glorybringer, where they all kill each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's who plays what first or whatever,
Yeah, it seems like it could be really fun for that little subgame to exist of mind games and standard, except then it's all just going to be like, oh, you guys were doing that, and I cast the Heart of Kieran and Gideon.
Yeah.
But this card...
Well, I mean, I think that all three of these cards would be in the same deck that plays Heart of Kieran and Gideon.
Well, that's true, too, yeah. Yeah, it's a fun one though. So I would not be surprised. It's starting. This is an attractive price point for a $5 mythic that is playable. And even if it isn't a big deal, it's probably not going to go much below say 3, right? So we're talking about now our first realistic card to try to put some of your trade stock in at the pre-release, because it could go up, and like we were saying, it's definitely one of those that post-rotation could just go from nothing to taking over, sort of like Desecration Demon being the best example, or Night Vale Spectre back in the day. Cards that just went from existing to being sort of, format defining. So, yeah, I don't hate that one at all. All right, so moving on to, we have another god here, the blue one, Kefnet, I guess, the Mindful. 3 mana, 5/5, flying indestructible, can't attack or block unless you have 7 more cards in hand. 4 mana with a blue, draw a card, then you may return a land you control to its owner's hand. 450 is actually the market price on this one, and it's got a lot going for it. What do you guys think?
I like it less than I used to.
I'm not a fan of buying in at 5 or 4 or whatever it's at.
Is this gonna do anything in standard?
I think this is the worst god.
Wow. Okay.
Well, no. I think that this is the second worst god. I'll rephrase that.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't think it's like, I think it's just so hard to make it, like, having 7 cards in hand is a pretty big drawback, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And, like, paying 4 mana to draw a card and then also set yourself back a land is, like, I'm just trying to think of the deck, like, what deck would exist that would want to play this card, and I'm having a hard time, like,
it's basically the only scenario for it is where you play it on turn 3 and then you play Glimmer of Genius on turn 4, but that means you did nothing on turn 2, and you're probably dead.
Yeah, and it's
think
also
of the landfall triggers.
Don't you have to be on the draw even for that to work too?
See, if we're on the play, we go down to 6. Turn 2, we go back to 7. Turn 3, we go back to 7. Play it, we're down to 6. We're down to 5.
So if you're on the play, like you're at 6 on.
No, I think it
every
works.
Every land drop puts you down to 6. So playing Kefnet puts you down to 5.
Yeah,
and then playing Glimmer puts you back to 6.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so it's just not even. Yeah. Meh. All right. Sounds like we're all passing on Kefnet. Now, we got a couple other gods here. Bantu the Glorified. This is a black god. Menace Indestructible, 4/6 for 3. Can't attack or block unless a creature died under... Oh, even worse. Unless a creature died under your control. 2 mana, sack another creature, scry 1. Each opponent loses 1 life and you gain a life. Is this anything that... I guess we'd have to have a pretty hardcore zombie deck going here, right?
Yeah, I think this card is like basically unplayable as standard sits
yeah,
right now, but I think it has potential to be good at some point.
Well, it's got a nice that second ability, the activated ability, does quite a bit if you can if you can build a deck around it.
Yeah, I'm imagining there's like a possible existence of some sort of like hidden stockpile deck at some point.
Okay.
But I don't see that being a thing right now, where that kind of grindy card advantage just doesn't really work in the face of like vehicles and the 4-color copycat combo.
Right. Yeah, you're trying to play a game that no one else is going to play, even with Zillaport Cutthroat, which is sort of, you know, the cool aspect of it. But so maybe some people try Cryptolithrites, but you're just going to get comboed out.
Yeah, I do think this card's pretty cool, but I'm not sure like where it sees play.
Yeah.
We need like a Junk Aristocrats back or something.
I would argue we should always have Junk Aristocrats.
Me too.
Buildable in standard.
Me too. That deck was great.
Yeah, that was a fun one. All right, let's move
Blood Artist is one of my favorite cards.
Yeah.
It's in my top 10 for sure.
Oh,
which card?
Blood Artist.
Oh, okay.
Yep, it's good in a lot of stuff. You know, the Aristocrats, the like real heavy Aristocrats sacrifice deck in Modern is like sometimes floats in and out of being playable too. It's a fun one.
We have a podcast named after one of those cards.
That deck was so fast I could beat somebody in a match faster than I could tell the Aristocrats joke.
Wow. That was like a high level. That was good, Jason. That was some high level comedy references that I don't know if any people will get.
I would be surprised if 100% of our listeners didn't get that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I haven't heard the Aristocrats jokes in quite some time. So
yeah, like
they did that South Park episode about it. I think that helped.
When was that?
Oh god, it was probably like 2003 or 2004, back when they made
the movie, right? And that's when I heard about it. Of course, I was also like 14 at the time, but I don't think there's a lot of people now who are, anyone under the age of 20 has probably just not heard it.
And I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, see,
you don't know the Aristocrats joke? Or I'll tell it for an after.
Oh god. Yeah, you'll love it, DJ. It'll be great. All right, let's talk about Oketra the True. 4 mana, 3/6, white god, double strike indestructible, can't attack or block unless you control 3 other creatures. 4 mana, create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance. This has sweet stats.
I heard somebody call this better than Heliod, and I don't think that's correct.
It's similar.
I believe this to be worse than Heliod.
Yeah.
I saw some people on Reddit being angry that it didn't make cat tokens. Like, I wanted to put this in my cat tribal deck, but it doesn't make cat tokens.
That seems like
what are you doing? Fire Morrow.
That seems like a valid complaint.
Yeah, I actually agree with that complaint.
Give us cats, DJ.
Yeah, I don't think this, like, Heliod basically, well, I tried to make Heliod work, but Heliod basically saw no play, and I think this is, like, worse on almost every level.
Yeah, it attacks well. It obviously would block well. It's cool, but it's very, very slow. And then the payoff is not even that great.
You have three other creatures in play. Why are they attacking you?
Well, yeah. I mean, the idea is you could attack with it, I guess, and it'd be. But it's
no,
like
no,
not
I'm
even.
I'm agreeing with you that it's a bad card.
Yeah, it's just not even that much damage at that point. Like, it's fine, but
plus Heliod makes enchantments.
Yeah,
I think this is
good
the worst.
Sarah Sanctum,
the worst of the gods.
All right, so let's move on to, I think this is our final god, Hazoret the Fervent.
I almost said it on accident.
It's a 5/4 for 4 indestructible haste. Can't attack or block unless you have one or fewer cards in hand. 3 mana, discard a card, deals 2 damage each opponent. I kind of think this is a little playable.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised this is the cheapest god. I think it's the best one.
Wow, okay, so this could be, and it's only $4, and, you know, we've seen from the gods from, you know, Theros block, and I'm going to look real quick here at Thassa, for instance, is one that saw a little bit of, you know, saw some standard play, and now is $6.50. So I think we're, the floor for these gods is probably like $2, you know, they're not going to be any cheaper than that at a minimum, I think, and it might even be like $3. So seeing this thing come out of the gates at $4 is surprisingly low.
You know what card this reminds me of? Arc Slogger.
It doesn't. Yep. Not that old.
That's a Mirrodin rare, Corbin. You wouldn't understand it.
Arc Slogger was a card that, like, initially you mill yourself for 10 to deal them 2 damage, and everyone's like, I'm not going to mill myself 10 to deal 2 damage, but then you realize it's attacking for 4, and you just mill 20 cards, hit them for 8 on the last turn they're alive, and you just win the game.
I feel like this card spiked when Lotmaniac got printed.
Wasn't that like a Patrick Chapin, like, wasn't that like one of the cards that put Chapin on the map?
Arcslogger? Yeah. Probably one of them. That guy, that guy contributed a lot more to, like, random card spiking probably than any other single person.
Wow. Travis Wu takes offense.
Well, he makes actual good decks. Travis Wu's like, play these because they're Travis Wu brews. And Pat Chapin's like, play these if you want to do well at a tournament.
Saffron Olive is definitely taking offense. He spikes all the cards these days. He's got the secret sauce to spiky magic cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't there, like, I remember a time where it was like the top 10 sellers were just 10 cards from, like, some blue deck that he was playing?
Yeah, it was like the Rise from the Tides deck, I think, because it was reasonably competitive-ish. And budget, yeah.
I'll rephrase, has made actual cards in actual
okay.
decks.
Fair enough. I don't hate it at $4. So what kind of deck would this look like in standard? Just a sort of your red deck win sort of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of like a red deck win style deck. I don't know exactly, what exactly that looks like. But I do think that of all the cards that we've seen, of all the gods that we've seen, this is the one that is, like, the most easy to turn on, I think.
Yes, because it does what you already want
to
do.
You just have to play Magic to turn it on.
Yeah, and I think that, like, all the gods are, like, obviously, like, way above power level if they were just always creatures, like... You know, they're indestructible, they have huge power toughness, and they're pretty cheap mana-wise. And So it just like becomes a matter of like how easily can you turn them on. And it's like, you know, the white one's really hard to turn on. The blue one's pretty hard to turn on. The black one's like pretty hard to turn on, but has a good ability if you have a deck. And like the green one and the red one are the two easiest ones to turn on. So I think those are probably just the two best ones. Mm-hmm. But I actually think like the way with all the plethora of like Fatal Push, Harness Lightning, stuff like that, I think the red one's the easiest to get active.
Yes.
Just, yeah. I mean, hand size, getting down to one or fewer cards in hand is not that hard. You know, getting seven cards in hand is pretty hard.
Yeah, you just mulligan for value. It's easy.
Yeah, you just mold a five, four lands, Hazoret. Let's go.
Doing it.
You get this incidentally by doing what you're already trying to do, as opposed to you work really hard to meet these conditions. Like, you're going to accidentally empty your hand just playing a red deck that's aggressive. You're not going to keep your hand full playing a blue deck that's doing anything except...
And it attacks, attacks for quite a bit.
Losing the card advantage.
Imagine if Harsh Mentor actually did stop Saheeli combo. Then this red deck we're talking about would be so much better because it could just play a card that it would already play and it would give it onboard protection to copycat. Whereas now it's like, yeah, you play your Hazoret, you probably tag them for a lot, and they could still kill you, you know? So Harsh Mentor, I would be so much more sold on a red deck if Harsh Mentor did that. But it's possible that the other cards can kind of push that deck out anyways, or that this deck can just afford to leave its last card in hand, be shock or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this deck is probably like a black-red deck. It can play cards like Lightning Axe along with Madness, like Fiery Temper or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of a deck where it's just like, you play Key to the City is another card too, like... Key to the City, your Hazoret. Now you're down to one card, you know.
Right. Yeah, Key to the City is a sweet one. Okay, so...
I was kind of hoping there would be an aggressive embalm creature in red that would, like, reward you for doing stuff like that.
All right, so let's move on here. Getting towards the bottom of our list. Champion of Vronus. 4-mana 3/3 that you can exert and put a creature into play. Not attacking, just onto the battlefield. This is pretty sweet. It's sort of your Elvish Piper variant of the set. But I think it's pretty good at that.
Yeah, I don't think it's that... I mean, I think it's probably a good casual card. I don't think it's going to see
play, though. You're not sold on the play it on turn 3, attack on turn 4, put a Verdor Skearhulk into play?
No, because, like... The issue I have with that is one, it's like a hill giant, which
yeah, it's true.
stats wise, it's just too small to matter.
Uh-huh.
And two, like by the time you're putting that like a Gearhulk into play, like you have 5 mana anyway.
Yeah, you could just cast it.
And then like if you're putting big stuff into play, like Ulamog or whatever, then it's just like you're this kind of awkward deck where. You know,
you need your combo pieces basically.
You're relying on your hill giant to survive to play your big thing.
Right.
Like, it's just hard for me to imagine like this card being good.
Maybe an Aetherworks Marvel deck could play them just as a backup plan. But yeah, I kind of agree. It's a little awkward. Plus, I think if you're not casting Ulamog, it's just going to be worse than ever because cast out is going to be in so many decks.
Right. Yeah. That too.
Yeah. All right. So next up, we have the Cycle of Lands. They all seem to be $3 to $4 right now. Honestly, I think that's probably right. I think they're probably $3 overall, maybe $2. But they're pretty great. They are pretty great.
Why don't we have a green-black one?
Because
that was the only one I wanted.
Mana maybe balance they'll make or one something.
Keep asking like every single episode.
They're going to make it in 5 years. They're setting up the expectation now.
Good. Then I'll care about these. When one of them is $4 instead of $3.
I mean, is there no chance that those lands are in Hour of Devastation or whatever?
That's also true.
They haven't been doing that lately.
That's true. They have lately been setting up a bunch of cycles without completing them. Right? Like, they did that in Battle for Zendikar and Shadows. Is that true?
Yep. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, they set up two new cycles, then they completed a cycle, now they're setting up another new cycle. I don't know how far back we have to go since they did all 10. Theros, maybe?
Well, Corbin, they're making the full cycle this time. They all have cycling.
God, shut up. Jesus.
This is why you're not a permanent member of this podcast.
Oh my God, that was embarrassing. DJ.
We have a guest on. We have two guests on. We have a guest other than you, DJ. Stop embarrassing us.
All right, let's just move right on along here. Combat Celebrant, 4-1 Mythic, red card. If it has not been exerted this turn, you can exert it as attacks. If you do, you get an additional attack step. And obviously your stuff's on taps. $3. Is this going in that deck at all? Is this in our red deck wins deck with Hazoret?
Maybe. I don't actually know. I know some people are high on this card. Mm-hmm. But I'm high on if this card sees play, I'm expecting it to be based on like one line on its type line, which is human.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
Because I think that humans may come back because we have
always watching that deck. Initiate.
What's that?
Are you talking about like the always watching version?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think that humans may come back with like always watching and stuff because we have the glory bound initiate, which is so absurd with always watching.
Yes, it is.
And so I think that like if anything, it sees play in that deck, and that's about where I would see it seeing play. I don't know. Like, there's actually like a number of good 3-mana humans. There's also the one that makes two when it attacks. Things like that. So can't think of its name right now, but.
Hammer Garrison, is that the one?
That guy, yeah.
Yeah, this card is pretty good, and if the first one you can attack with is turn 4 when you play your Hazoret, like, that's actually just a billion damage, so.
There's also another human, too. It's just an uncommon, Devoted Cropmate, that might be better than this card, too.
Let's see here. Devoted Cropmate? Let's see.
Yeah, when it attacks, you can exert it to return a creature with CMC 2 or less from graveyard to play.
Oh, and that card's called Thalia's Lieutenant.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah. I have a lot of Thalia's Lieutenants. I would really appreciate it if that would be a thing.
I'll do my best. Thanks.
I like the idea. I mean, also, I think that, you know, going back to the Celebrant, it's under $3. And if we see a white-red human deck have success, it seems like the kind of thing people would flock to because it's so different than, you know, what standard has looked like for the past 6 months. You know, So I think that could spike the card. So it's you know, for the first SCG weekend, you see white red humans top 8 and do well. You know, this could easily hit $5-6 at a minimum. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on. If not, I'm not buying into it, but I'm, you know, it's worth watching.
Yeah, I'm not gonna invest into a 4/1 for 3, but I do think it does have some potential.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Glory Bringer. I think that it. 250, this card is possibly a buy. I think this is pretty good. Kills a lot of relevant things, and you know, it's the haste dragon of the set.
Yeah.
I think some of the value's gotta come from a lot of the cards that we talked about liable to lose value also. And it's only a 2x multiplier on the foil. Is that because it's a
the game day promo?
That's a promo.
Well, I guess it's a I don't know
top 8
price wise, how much I would do it, but this card is good in standard, right, Brian?
I think so, yeah. Like, again, it kind of has the Avacyn problem where it sits on top of Avacyn.
Right.
But we've seen this card be printed twice before, and both times it was like a dominant card. Thundermaw Hellkite Stormbreath Dragon. Yep. So, I mean, I think that, I mean, I definitely got a set when it came out at like $2. So
it's only a rare. But I think it could easily slot into, you know, multiple decks that either might come up around it, or it just becomes like this Mardu card that they start playing when they sideboard or whatever, you know.
Yeah, like I think it also has the potential to just be like, you know, it's going to be in standard for 2 years or whatever. Like, maybe it's not great now, but
right.
At some point in time, it's hard for me to imagine this card not seeing some play.
It also, if we're talking, you know, rotation wise, you lose Avacyn, you get Angel of Sanctions. Well, you can play it and immediately kill the Angel of Sanctions, and it's one of the few like card neutral ways of dealing with it. Since, you know, then they bring it back, you kill it with a removal spell, you've still traded 1 for 1, which is very hard to do with that card. It demands a lot of two for ones.
Also, if, you know, if they're exiling it and then you get to, if they're Oblivion bringing it and you bring it back, you get immediately.
Yeah. All right. So next up is Channeler Initiate. Now, this is one we actually talked about last week, and I think it was $1.50 then. And I was like, I really like this card at that price, and it's up to almost $3 now. I don't know what else it'll do, but it's a 2-mana 3/4 that when it comes into play, put 3-1 counters on a creature you control, tap it, remove a counter from it, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So
this card works within the infrastructure of the other cards that people are most interested in the set. The -1/-1 counter stuff is, it's what I see the most chatter about, especially from casual people. You know, they're Devoted Druid spiked because of that card that lets you put 0 counters on Devoted Druid to get a mana.
I'm excited for that, man. Yeah. I am excited.
So Channeler Initiate, like, the most popular general on EDH rec right now is Hapatra, the Vizier of Poisons. That's a -1/-1 counter card. Like, everything indicates, you know, the fact that -1/-1, you kill a creature with a counter on it, that card spiked too. Like, there's just all kind of stuff people are interested about. So I think this card has upside, and I think it could end up soaking up some of the value. This was better at $1.50, but I think this is a $5 card.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. It's I think it's probably worse than Servant of the Conduit in most decks. And I know from your article last week that I edited that you agree, right, BBD?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think that, like, I have a soft spot in my heart for Nest of Scarabs, which I think is going to be, depending on what support we get, that card is like super, super powerful. And this goes really well with it. But right now it just feels like it's too little to do something with.
Yeah, it's got a lot of potential though. So it's worth keeping an eye on. And I think it's got some momentum going for it right now. So I think this is a pretty solid one to pick up this weekend. All right, next up is Soulscar Mage. 1-drop, 1/2 prowess, red creature. If a source you control will deal damage to a creature an opponent controls, instead it has wither, you put that many -1 counters on it instead. It's not, it's a rare. It's not Monastery Swift Sphere, but it's okay. I mean, I don't think it's going to stay 250 or anything, though, but I think it will see play.
Yeah, I think it's okay. Like, it's, I think it's worse than Swift Spear.
Yeah.
Pretty definitively.
By a lot.
But,
by a lot.
Yeah, I don't know whether that means it can't see play. I mean, Swift Spear is one of the best red one drops we've seen. So, but I'm not, like, holding my breath that this one's going to see a lot of play.
Yeah, and there's no way I think it stays 250 either. All right, next up, Pull from Tomorrow. $2 is the Sphinx's Rev-ish card we referred to earlier. It's blue X, draw X cards and discard a card. Does this make draw go control or just, I guess, those sort of decks a thing at all again?
Yeah, this is one of the cards that I think is by far the hardest for me to evaluate in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does bear a lot of similarity to Revelation, Sphinx's Revelation, but it's really hard to it's hard to overstate how important gaining that much life was.
Right.
Which, like, people seem to really, you know, life gain's kind of overlooked a lot as being a pretty weak ability. And really, that's what made Revelation disgusting.
Right, yeah.
It's like, you gain 5 life, and it's just, you not only do you draw 5 cards, you fog your opponent.
Right, like, drawing 10 cards or whatever is great, but it doesn't matter if you still get shocked when you cast it or whatever, right? After, but, yeah, I tend to agree. I think this is, you trade off, you know, you get one more, kind of, you get filtering out of it, right? Because you pay 1 less mana up front for the same number of cards drawn, but then you have to discard. I mean, I think it's worse than Sphinx's Revelation, like, pretty clearly, but it could work. There's enough cycling cards and flash cards and maybe even counter spells now that it is conceivable that the blue-white control deck could look like those old decks and play this card, even if it's not as good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll see some play. Like, I think it's still a good card. It's just, yeah.
Honestly, and I could be wrong, but in my head, those blue-white decks probably have a decent Saheeli matchup because they can do so much at instant speed.
I mean, cast out definitely goes a long way.
Right.
Yeah. So it really depends on that. Like, they're also, you know, it depends a lot too on like who's on the play versus the draw too. You know,
that is
on the
true.
Play and you get to stick your Saheeli before they get counter magic up or whatever.
That's very true. Although the four spike may go a little ways to changing that, but not if you have a servant on turn two. You know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so here's a card I'm very excited about, Drakehaven. And I actually think this has upside at under $2 because it'll probably be a 4 of in any deck that plays it. It's a 3-mana enchantment. Whenever you cycle or discard a card, you can pay 1 if you do get a 2/2 Drake.
I really like this.
Yeah, I'm surprised this card is under $2. I think this is top 3, top 5 card in the set.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and
plus if it gets played way as a 4 of almost all the time, right?
Yeah.
Plus people are going to want to play it because they liked their Astral Slide decks, and this is the closest we get, you know?
This with the New Horizons seems really good.
So I like this a lot under $2. All right, so let's...
I think this card's great.
All right, so we're going to go more or less rapid fire here through the last couple cards. I know we've been gone a bit. So we have Cascading Cataracts at $1.75. It's the add indestructible land for whatever reason. I guess because it has the gods on it. Add colorless 5-mana filter at 5-mana of any combination. Sweet card, right? But probably about the right price.
A ton of EDH decks want this.
Yep, so foils perhaps are good. The foil currently is, yeah, it makes sense. It's almost $9. What do you think of it at that price, Jason?
$9 for the foil? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It'll probably get cheaper than that, and it'll probably be more expensive than that at some point. Right. So I don't like it at $9.
Just wait for it?
Probably. See if it comes down when people open more packs.
All right. So next up, then, Anointed Procession. I know DJ...
This is the best card.
I know DJ's going to like this one for sure. $1.75. Parallel Lives.
As Parallel Lives is $7, this is the exact same card in white, which gives the like red-white decks that have a bunch of tokens and didn't have access to it before basically a Parallel Lives. So it gives green-white decks a second Parallel Lives. This is a $7 card.
I don't think you buy it at 2, though.
No, you wait for it to be like, 50 cents in 2 months, and then you buy 1,000 of them. Or you buy the foils because it'll probably get reprinted somewhere.
Yeah, the foil's almost impossible to reprint compared to the... but they haven't reprinted Parallel Lives.
Yeah, you know, that is true. That is true. But, you know, when we can plot it... When it's so easy to plot out the future of this card, both the foil and the non-foil, if it doesn't get reprinted, you may as well go with the foils because they're safer. You know, you don't want to get blown out by getting put into a commander set or two.
Yeah. So I guess wait to see if this ends up bulk and if the
it'll be like a $3
multiplier still.
It'll be like a $3 foil or something. And it'll be so easy to pick up and sit on.
So these are the cards you love when you do what we do.
Yeah. All right. So at $1.75, we have a New Avon Mind Sensor. BBD, is this going to do anything in Standard? It's a really fun one in Modern, but
doubtful.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. There's not a lot of searching, and there's like Evolving Wilds attuned with the Aether and Traverse, and I think that's basically it. And 2/1 flyer for 3 is just too weak of a body.
Right. This card is really, really awesome. So, but it seems like even in Modern, it just, you know, gets less and less playable every year. Which is too bad. The art's sweet, though. We got that Invocation. It's where it's at. All right, so... here's one I think we've all probably laughed at a little. Prowling Serpipod. Serpipard.
Serpent and Leopard.
Serpopard. 4/3.
I just came up with 4/3
for 3. Can't be countered. Creature spells control can't be countered. BBD, is there anything here?
I don't think so. I mean... I think Loxon Smiter was way better than this, and, you know. Yeah. Just three toughness, trading with Scrap Heap Scrounger or whatever, like.
Oh, yeah, that is quite bad.
I don't like it in Eternal either, because people are talking about, oh, this would be great in my Elf deck. I'm like, Gaze Herald is already an Elf, and you're not playing that.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Exactly. All right, next up, Shadow of the Grave. Instant return all hand to your cards that were cycled or discarded. It costs 2 mana. This is a cool design. I kind of doubt that it gets played, but
yeah,
it's obviously great in Commander.
Leovold too. Any deck with wheels.
Yeah.
Like anytime you windfall and then cast this, you're just gonna pull their pants down.
Are you though? Because like you're just then gonna probably be out of mana and discard to hand size. But
what discard to hand? What kind of EDH are you playing?
Okay, man. Not everybody always has the Reliquary Tower. Or the Thought Vessel or whatever it is. I discard to hand size a lot in my Carador deck. I just say go on turn one so I can discard. And
Wow, you're such a strategic mastermind.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's tech. You guys heard it here.
Bringing a little bit of that that real magic into Commander.
Nobody's ever done that before in Magic, Corbin.
Yeah, you know, man.
But your playgroup was like mind blown.
It actually does get people. People do right now. A little double take. They're like, because nobody expects it in Commander. They're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, man. I don't know. Just never lucky.
They know what your Commander is.
Yep. Anyways, all right. So next up, a rare Glorybound Initiate. As we talked about earlier. It's pretty nuts. 3/1 for 2. You can exert it as it attacks. If so, it gets +1/+3 in lifelink. So, like, crap. This thing's a turn 3 attack for 4 lifelink. 4/4 lifelinker. And if you have Always Watching, which you conveniently will, it's 5/5 with Vigilance. So this is just...
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, it's... I don't know how expensive... I don't know how it goes price-wise, because it's just a... generic creature, whatever, but I think this card will see some play.
I mean, Thalia's Lieutenant hit 5 for a minute, right? Or a month or two even, and it's currently sitting at about $2. So I would certainly think that if we see those decks come back, Glorybound would go above $1.50, even if it came back down later.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going to like 3 to 5 or something.
Yeah. You know? And I think people are going
to... We always yada, yada, yada these sub-$2 cards, and they're really the only place to make money, and we always spend the least amount of time on them.
Because nobody wants to hear about it, though. Nobody wants to hear how to make
Tireless money. Tracker, it's T, who cares, whatever. It's a Gray Ogre. Moving on.
I mean, I agree. I think Glorybound could go 3 to 5, and I think that you can't overestimate, or you can't underestimate... in a standard that's been as sort of flat and dull as this one has been for the past few months, people just wanting to do something different, which is play their humans and play their Always Watching and attack. So, yeah, I kind of like it at $1.50. And I think it's strong enough that it probably won't go below a dollar, period. So you're risking very little on it.
It's, yeah.
All right. Next up, Throne of the God Pharaoh, 2-mana artifact. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the number of tapped creatures you control. So it's an interesting reach in a... I guess it'd be best in a token deck, but even maybe a creature deck. But does this human deck we're talking about, or maybe the red deck, want a card like this, Brian? Or is this not where you want to be in standard?
I don't think so. Like, you're just going to... If you have a bunch of tapped creatures, they're probably dying anyway. Right. I don't see this card doing much.
Yeah, it feels a lot like a one more. It's kind of cool design, though. I think it probably has more commander applications since it's each opponent and it's easier to go wide with tokens there.
Yeah, you can also, like, if you have some sort of thing where, like, you know, you're tapping your creatures for mana or whatever, then...
Cryptolith Rites.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Okay. Plague Belcher is next. I actually like this card. It's pretty cool. It's a 3-mana, 5/4 menace zombie beast. When it enters the battlefield, put 2/1/1 counters, negative counters, on the creature you control. Whenever a zombie you control dies, each opponent loses a life. So it works pretty well with everything. Plus, I'm thinking in Modern, like, you can throw these counters on a Bloodghast or a Gravecrawler and then play a land and get it right back, you know?
Yeah, this guy's really good. The stats are good. A 5/4 menace for 3 mana, if you can avoid having to put the counters on it.
And even if you do, like... That last ability is not irrelevant. You know, it's not quite good enough for the blue-black zombie lord Diregraph Captain to see play, even though that card's really good in Modern. But this stays in black, so it allows, you know, you don't have to worry about the mana costs.
I don't know if this $1.50 is necessarily incorrect, but I think this has a lot of potential. Yeah.
Card's sweet. Anything in standard? Are we getting tribal zombies in standard, Brian?
I mean, there's a bunch of good zombie cards. This card is powerful. I don't think. I mean, there's already like the zombie. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
There's like the blue red zombie decks.
Yeah. I mean, I could see something. Maybe I'm not sure.
Like, Grixis zombies, perhaps.
It seems like it's like a tribal deck that's a little below the power level of the rest of the format. Yeah. But.
Fun, but maybe not. Like, you can build your deck and then it's just not going to be as, and it can be synergistic and still just not as powerful. All right, so after that we've got another handful. Is there anything of these others that stands out to you guys? You know, we're talking Harvest Season, Bone Picker, Dread Wanderer, Hepatra, any of the other cards basically in the set that stand out to you guys at this point?
Yeah, Hepatra is the most popular EDH commander, and currently the foils are only about 650. That's only a 4x multiplier. I'm not saying buy the foils, I'm just saying I think Hepatra is a card you look at, and then you go to the EDH rec page and see what other cards are in the deck, and those have upside. So I think this is going to move a ton of prices, because it's basically -1/-1 counter tribal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And people are excited about that. So I think that's worth looking at. I think Neheb is not going to move. The Minotaur guy, I don't think that's going to move any cards worth caring about.
Okay.
Like, maybe Didgeridoo will go back up to 5. It's like everything in that deck. Mogis is already expensive because he's a good card in his own right. And then you've got, like, what, Rageblood Shaman, that's a bulk rare. Tangrowth is a bulk rare. Oracle of Bones, Minotaur Skullcleave. Like, all this stuff is bulk rares. And the only stuff that's good finance-wise in those decks is already expensive because it's, like, Adaptive Automaton or Coat of Arms. So ignore that. I think Temet is bad. I don't think it's going to make good decks. And people aren't really excited about it. I don't know. Like, embalming it right away and then trying to get there that way seems like just, like, a really bad Boltron deck. You probably want to be Daxos of the Meletus if you're trying to do crap like that. So I think Hepatra is a card you look at to see what other prices it's going to move, but I don't know if it's going to get above, like, $2 or $3 in the short term.
Okay.
I think Curator of Mysteries could go up a little bit. It's the only one I see, really.
Curator of Mysteries. Oh, yeah, so this is the it's $1 right now. It's the 4-drop Sphinx. 4/4 blue, and 2 generic. Flying, whenever you cycle or discard, scry 1, and it itself cycles for 1 blue. Do you think this will be a... You think this... It feels a little small to be like a control finisher or whatever. You think it's just sort of a value card in maybe our Drakehaven deck?
Yeah, if Drakehaven's a thing, this card's going to be a 4X in that deck because you can cast it when you need to, and it does, you know, it's another flying creature, or you can just cycle it for 1 mana, which anything that cycles for 1 mana is going to be good in a deck where you're trying to cycle for value.
Right. I'll definitely be playing. I think Curator Mysteries probably slots into Living End too, for what it's worth. All that deck ever wanted was more 1 mana cyclers. Well, you already, like, my list, like, you already run Architects of Will. Well, it cycles for blue or black, but the point was a lot of decks already ran, like, a Watery Grave for the ability to cast it if you needed to. So it doesn't seem that difficult to adjust your mana base a little and get to play Curator in it. Because, like, I don't know, in my opinion, all that deck ever wanted was 1 mana cyclers so that you can more reliably do everything you need to do. So I certainly think it'll fit.
This set has a Cat Lord. Cat Lords are good.
Yeah.
Just for, I mean, casuals are going to buy these 4 at a time.
Yeah.
We have a Zombie Lord enchantment. I don't know how good it is, though, because it just, I don't know, it makes 2/3.
Hang in there, buddy. We're almost done.
Well, yeah, it's mastery. But I don't know. Tribal stuff is always good because casual players like it, and casual players buy a lot of Magic cards.
Right.
So, we've never had a, have we had a Cat Lord before? I think we must have, right? Kemba.
Yeah.
Does Kemba boost cats?
Or no, not Kemba, Raksha. It's Raksha, okay. Golden Cub from Original Mirrodin. It's like a 7-mana something-something, but as long as it's equipped, all your cats get +2.
This gives your cats lifelink. That's going to be really annoying. So, Regal Carousel.
They already had 9 lives, and now they're going to get, like, even more.
Would you stop? It's not even fun anymore.
I actually give you a little bit for that one, DJ. That one was all right.
Stop doing what I do.
All right. Well, all right. I think.
So there's good stuff here. I mean, as always, it's going to be a $1 card that goes to seven. And everyone's going to be like, God, why didn't you get that? So maybe we'll change the format next set review.
And get better at this.
I think if you're trying to pick up a few free enchantments sitting around in Draft Chaff, cast out Sixth Sense and, man, what's the other one? There's probably another one I'm missing.
Sensor, yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, that's the Almond Cat set review, guys. Enjoy the pre-release this weekend, and want to thank BBD again for coming on. For everyone listening, Brian, where can they find you on social medias or articles or any of that stuff?
Yep, I have articles weekly on magic.tcplayer.com, and I'm on Twitter at BrownDoingIt, and I'm also on Facebook, although I mostly post Magic things on Twitter. So if you want to follow me, that's probably the best place is Twitter, and then articles on TCGplayer.
What about those people who want to creep on your home life, though?
Facebook it up, then, yeah.
You suppose, maybe not Magic stuff, you get some, your Facebook posts are worth reading, I think. There's some pretty funny ones a lot of times.
Yeah, I have been posting them fewer and far between, but I usually try to, if I post on Facebook, I try to make it worthwhile for people to read.
Right. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. You kept us from being quite as dumb as we usually are talking about standard cards. So if you weren't here, we probably would have called As Foretold as a $40 mythic. So we appreciate that.
I called it a non-mythic. So
yeah.
I didn't actually know it was mythic until I did this thing either.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was mythic, and then I saw I brought it up on TCG Player, and it looked non-mythic. Like, the color of the expansion symbol looked non-mythic, and I didn't look for the M right next to it.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. This is Brainstorm Brewery. Enjoy your pre-release this weekend, and we'll see you next week.